All right, welcome to episode 52 of the Bobbycast. Here with Luke Laird, who is, and I said this before you were here, like, you're the upper 1% of songwriters here in Nashville, and you don't have to comment on this if you don't want. But you know how they always go, you know, the top 2% of American rich people. You're right. That of the songwriters in town.
I mean, I guess right at this very moment in time, that can change quickly, though.
When did that happen? Again, I don't have any notes here.
Sure.
So I would 21 number ones.
23.
It's close.
Just because I had one last week.
Okay.
What
was last week?
Luke Bryan.
Oh, Flask.
Flask. Oh. Yeah, I haven't heard that yet.
Oh, you didn't hear Flask? No. I'll play it for you in a little bit. And that was Luke's sixth number one from that record.
Crazy.
Which is a whole
he's
two.
He's like the guy right now.
It's a whole Flask. Can you hear him? Yeah, he's still. Say hi, Luke.
Hey.
There you go. We hadn't actually met until the ACMs.
Yeah.
It was the first time that I guess we physically had run into each other. So congrats on that new number one.
Thank you.
Okay, here's a question for you. These things move so fast now.
Right.
Like fast. It moves so fast.
Especially Luke Bryan.
Luke or Blake.
Yeah.
The A-listers.
Right.
Like, is that frustrating for you as a writer? Because, again, you're not making as much if it flies up the chart so fast.
Well, no, it's not frustrating because with a guy like that, and first of all, there are no guarantees, but if Luke Bryan at this point in time puts a song out, you're pretty much guaranteed it's going to be a hit.
Yes.
With other new artists, you don't know. I mean, it can be a longer ride and a better payout possibly, but with a superstar, I'm not frustrated with that.
That's just part of the game. Yeah. Where if Luke cuts it, you know it's going to be about a 13-weeker maybe.
Yeah, right now. It's true.
Like, Luke does that. Blake does that. There are about 4 or 5 people who really, like, they're going to be hits. And they're going to fly up the chart. And then here comes the other one. That's the only reason Luke can put 6 songs out on a record is because they move so fast.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't. If it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get onto the next record because it just, you know, the label can't sit on an album for that long. They need new product. But, yeah, with Luke, I mean, he doesn't have time to get in there. He can't record fast enough.
Are you the hardest person to book a write with in town?
No.
You say that fast. You don't think you are?
No.
Who's harder to book with you?
Probably Ashley Gourley. And, I mean, there's probably a lot of other ones, but someone like Ashley, I mean, that guy. Now, I will say, he writes more than I do. He'll write 2 or 3 times a day.
Still.
I mean, it's someone like that, it blows my mind. I can't do it. I just don't have, I'm just not that good. I can't do that. One time a day is, like, perfect for me. And, honestly, ideally, I would write 3, 4 at the most times a week.
And how many of those songs, if you write 4 songs in a week, how many of those songs ever actually see the light of day?
I mean, if one of them did, that would be amazing, but it's not even that.
Is it like a racehorse that has won the Kentucky Derby? And, like, he's out humping other horses, right? And it's like one of the horses is probably going to be a nice horse.
Yeah.
Genetically, it's probably going to be a very fast horse. Yeah. But all of them aren't. But you're going to get some real powerful horses if you...
Sure.
If you... Would you say that you're basically the... what was that movie with Tobey Maguire? Are you the Seabiscuit of songwriters?
I mean, Rodney Clausen's probably more of a stud horse than I am. But...
Toby Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Tobey Maguire. Yeah. So Rodney Clausen is more of the Seabiscuit.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, and where I'm at too, I'm fortunate because I do get to write with the other writers that are having the current hits on the chart. So it's kind of like this perfect timing where you're writing with everybody that has stuff going on. So you're constantly raising the bar. Now, I try to write with new people too because at some point you just write yourself right out of the game if you don't get new, fresh ideas. But my odds are a lot better right now than they were 10 years ago.
So, I have all of your number ones here. And, you know, we could spend an hour going over each song. I guess let's start with the very beginning. And we'll start with your first ever number one.
Sure.
Talk about that one. Which one was it?
So Small.
Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood. And it was, I mean, here's the thing. She had just come off an album that was like ended up selling like 7 million records. I had 0 hits. So for me to get the opportunity to work with her before that second record, when everybody in town was trying to write with her.
How does that happen then? If you have zero hits and Carrie's Carrie.
Well, a couple things happened with that. First of all, I'm friends with Hillary Lindsay, and we wrote songs together, and Carrie's like, you know, Hillary is like the go-to writer for Carrie Underwood. So I had already been writing with Hillary, and then there was also a publisher in town who I worked with named Chris Oglesby, and he was at the time really helping introduce Carrie to the songwriting community. So I had him on my team as well as someone like Hillary, and then she had heard a couple other songs that I'd written that she liked enough to give me a shot to write.
When you go on with someone like Carrie for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and you're green as far as hits at this
point. Yeah, zero hits.
Are you super overly prepared, and are you a little nervous walking into the room that she's going to think, oh, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, absolutely. And I still feel that way. But yeah, we definitely, Hillary and I got together the night before and tried to come up with as many ideas to throw to her as possible. And the thing is, Carrie can write too, but you don't want to go in there and just say, hey, I wonder what's going to happen today. You want to have stuff like, here's a title, here's a, like, this song is going down the road. But yes, it's nerve-wracking, and for sure, really nerve-wracking then. And it's still that way when you get with like a big artist, because you don't. It's always, I think, that those insecurities that we all have. You're like, I don't want them to think I suck, and I don't. I just want to come up with something.
Walking into a room with blank was the most intimidating you'd ever felt.
Oh man, Brett Michaels. No.
Have you written with Brett?
I did, yeah.
The nicest guy.
So nice.
Like, so nice and, like, full of energy and, like, you just want... He wants to hug you and you're like, okay, I'll hug you back.
I mean, that's the funniest thing. I literally put on Twitter, kind of as a joke, but kind of not, because, like, my kid self was, like, huge Poison fan. And I literally, like, at Brett Michaels, you know, would you ever... You know, if anybody knows Brett Michaels, you know, I'd love to write a song with him. And I swear... The next day, I get a call from Brett Michaels on my phone.
He's like, hey, man.
He got my number from like a newspaper writer or something. I can't remember who. May have been. No, I don't even remember.
Such
who
a nice guy.
Yeah, so nice.
Positive, makes you feel like. I remember meeting Brett too, and I was like, oh boy. Like, am I. Because for me, I'm a guy that doesn't like to meet people that they really. Like,
I know.
Because. Humans are human, and the bad thing about humans being human is we're all faulted and flawed, yeah. And we put our heroes in this place where they don't have faults and flaws.
Definitely.
Brett was awesome.
Gosh, he really lived up to the hype. And he's just, to speak of, you know, of a lot of energy, I'm just like, crazy. But
who, so we'll take Brett off the off there. Who else did you want? Somebody called you and said, hey, we want you to go write with so-and-so, and you're like, oh,
okay.
Goodness.
Snoop Dogg.
What? You wrote with Snoop?
I did, just me and him. I did a panel with him out during like Grammy week out at the Roxy in Hollywood. And it was like a BMI panel where, so they had different writers from different
genres.
When
was this, by the way?
This would have been 3 years ago. Yeah. And so we're there. It's like a noontime thing, and it's all like aspiring songwriters and producers. And then it's like me. I'm like the country guy. And Busta Rhymes, Snoop Dogg, B.O.B., and David Hodges. And, I mean, I'm like a big hip-hop fan, so like this is, I can't believe it. Snoop's going to be there. So my wife, Beth, who is my manager and publisher and basically runs everything, after the show, she goes, hey, I think I got you a day to work with Snoop. I was like, no way.
That's crazy.
So I go backstage... after the show, and she's in this dressing room with, I swear, just this huge, on this dressing room table, huge mound of weed. And it's just funny seeing my wife in that setting, just talking to these guys and like just like doing this, like getting the smoke out of her face. And she told me that after. I was like, no, it's not going to happen. He'll cancel. Why would he want to work with me? He doesn't, you know. But it happened. I went out to L.A. for... It was supposed to be 2 days. They canceled one day, and so I worked with him for about 3 hours, and we did a song. It's never been released.
But you got the memory.
Yeah, and I have it. Like, I can listen to it.
And you have the song.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my buddies did a story on Snoop once, and he doesn't smoke a lot of weed, but he smokes Snoop's weed.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember. Like, he remembers waking up in his car, and he was like, I don't know what happened. Like, that. Because I'm also a huge hip-hop fan.
Yeah.
And so I was like, dude, yeah, tell me everything. So, and he was like, Snoop offered me some weed, and that's about all I remember.
Man, yeah. I think I probably got, like, a contact high, but I've been sober for over 10 years, so I was like, even Snoop wasn't worth messing it up. But I did have an amazing experience, and we were in it. But I was really, going back to what you're saying, I was really nervous going into that, because I'm like, what's he gonna think, you know? Like, and but he couldn't have been nicer. He was actually, a lot of times the artist, you're like, when are they gonna show up? He was there before I was. He was so professional. Like, you get to see him do what he excels at, and he literally got out the yellow legal pad, and I had written this chorus, and I played that for him, and then just I had a track, and so he wrote the verses. We didn't really collaborate. That's kind of how in hip hop a lot it works. It's not like you sit there like, let's talk about it. It's like, no, it's more freestyle. And but I see him just writing on these sheets of legal, and I was like, why, I wish somebody was videoing this.
You didn't keep the paper he wrote on?
No,
that'd have been a cool souvenir.
I know, I should have. Whenever, I took a picture of it.
You're taking me down a different road here, because you talk now. Was Busta fat by then?
He was WWF.
Yeah, I mean,
he was this.
Okay, so he was muscular. Now he's just really fat.
Oh yeah,
have you seen him? He looks bad. It's not good.
Yeah,
and Busta was. I mean, Busta was the first guy that I can remember in my childhood that went super fast.
Super fast, yeah.
Like, you had, like, Supersonic and stuff, but, you know. Yeah. But Busta, for JJ me, Fab. You know, whenever it was Put Your Hands, you know, I never heard anything like Busta before in my life.
No.
And I was like, I don't even know what he's saying, but I like it.
Yeah, exactly. And, it sounded cool.
And Busta, even though he's fat, I saw him on the BET Awards a lot, and he's still, I guess, body size don't matter how fast you rhyme.
No, it didn't change his lips.
And B.O.B. is, like, the craziest multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah, he's super talented.
Super, like,
eccentric.
Oh yeah, he's nuts. But, you know, to be creative, you gotta be nuts.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
He's nuts, but he's so musically gifted. And I, you know what, I did hip-hop and pop radio for a long time, so I got to meet a lot of these guys. And a lot of the studio sessions would go like this. Let's go in the studio, we'll get high, we'll just play a beat, you know, we'll throw some bars over it. Like, we like that one, let's do another one. But B.O.B. was like, guitars, tracks, like, and it was like, for a hip hop guy,
that's
different.
When they see you pick up a guitar, they're like, wow, what is this? But, like, yeah, he is like that. I try to go to Atlanta like at least once or twice a year, and I have gone down there to work with B.O.B. and with Future, and none of these songs have come to fruition as far as coming up. But for me, like, I don't even care, because I'm just like a kid at that point. It's like there's no expectation of like, oh, I have to come up with their next single, or, and it's just so much fun. If, like, my goal is to, like, write, you know, get a song on the hip hop charts at some point.
That Future stuff, that's cool, because Future's like the, I mean, Snoop, Busta, even B.O.B. is a half a generation back at this point. You know, Airplanes and Magic and that whole record. You know, hey, I'm Bob, and this is, you know, that's been a bit. But, like, Future right now is doing it.
He is, and he's one of those guys, too. Like, some of the stuff I hear, I'm like, is this, like, am I just out of the, like, then I start feeling old. I'm like, is this good? But then I'll hear something like, why do I want to listen to that again? It seems so dumb at first, and then you're like, why do I keep
How do they feel about you, though? Because here you come in, you're like me, we're just pasty, goofy guys.
So, yeah. I think there's something almost that, there's something that's almost disarming about it. It's not like I'm coming in trying to be them.
So, and you're not competing.
Right. I'm not in the grind every day like with all the other producers there. So it's I think it's just like a, kind of like it is for me. It's a different experience for them, and they're just intrigued by the, oh, he plays a guitar. He knows Luke Bryan or whatever. You know what I mean?
Do they really know anything about country? Cause
not much. I mean, some of them might, but it's funny. It'll be, you'll talk to a couple guys in that world, and they're like, yeah, man, I know Rascal Flatts, and which, cool, you know, but it's just so interesting, because, like, something, like, you say someone current, you know, they might be like.
And they're in their own bubble, much as we
are. Sure.
Like, we're in a big old bubble that sometimes
that's true.
That we can't even see outside of.
Absolutely.
And luckily for me, I get to tour and meet a lot of people. That keeps me somewhat like normal-ish, because I'm not normal in any way whatsoever. But I get to go and meet a lot of people that listen to music, and I get to see what they like. And the B.O.B. thing, and I hear B.O.B. is great, because I write and have written a bunch of like comedy stuff and songs with Christian Bush, and they share a studio space in Atlanta, because Christian lives in Atlanta.
Oh, I wonder if it's... I've been to that one.
Yeah. They're like right down the hall from each other.
Wow, that's cool.
And so, look, we could just spend probably an hour talking about hip-hop.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, let me talk about 1-800-FLOWER for a second. So after a cold, wet winter, it's officially tulip season at 1-800-flowers.com. And when it comes to surprising your friends, surprising your loved ones with the best blooms and the brightest colors, let me suggest to you 1-800-FLOWERS, because that's what I've used many, many, many times. And it's Easter, and it's a great price. Right now, 1-800-FLOWERS. Dusty, what are you doing? The dogs are going to be talking about flowers and wants to get on this. 1-800-FLOWERS giving my listeners an exclusive 30 for 30 offer, 30 assorted tulips for $30. The only $1 per tulip that you can find there. With a bright and beautiful mix of orange, yellow, and pink blooms, these assorted tulips are perfect for surprising your friends, and 1-800-FLOWERS handles the rest there. Simply pick your delivery date and let 1-800-FLOWERS handle the rest. 30 assorted tulips for $30. Yeah, 30 for 30, an amazing offer. But it expires Friday. Every bouquet is backed with the 1-800-FLOWERS 100% smile guarantee. Go to 1-800-FLOWERS.com/bones. 1-800-FLOWERS.com/bones. And get in on this before it goes away. 1-800-FLOWERS.com/bones. And not just for this, for all kinds of flowers as well. All right, so how about this? Let's do some Carrie stuff. So last name. You wrote this one. Mm-hmm. Who'd you write this with?
Carrie and Hillary. We actually wrote that the day after we wrote So Small.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you do two songs. Were those the only two songs that you wrote in those 2 days?
No, we ended up writing... I think we wrote one other song that didn't end up making it onto the record.
When you... Okay, let's say you finished those three songs. Are you like, hey, I feel pretty good about these three or this one or these two. Like, did you know? Kind of?
The thing is, I hadn't had any hits. I knew that, like, Last Name sounded more hit-ish, but I knew I really liked So Small. Like, I felt something when we played it. When you're sitting in the room with just the guitars and the two of them are singing it together, it's like, you know, this is amazing.
Well, and Hillary Lindsey can sing with Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the crazy thing about her, is that she can sing with... Like, I mean, with, like,
I know,
that level.
No, it's amazing, and I just felt lucky to be in that room, to be honest.
So you cut those two, or write those two. Mm-hmm. When do you get back that, hey, we're actually going to put these on a record? Because that's first before a single. Like, it's, hey, we're actually going to cut these songs.
I mean, it wasn't too long, because I remember we wrote those in, like, February, and the first single came out, I want to say in June or July, which is still a little bit of time. So,
what was the first single? Was it one of yours?
It was So Small.
Oh, and, man, when you get call that it's the first single from the record.
And it was my first single, and I remember, I mean, I was literally right down the street here at this condo I told you that I lived in, and I just remember exactly where I was when I got the call, and it's like this surreal moment. It's like, wow, as a kid you dream of writing songs and like want something on the radio, and this song is going to be on the radio, and it's Carrie Underwood, who just came off the biggest album of the year or whatever. This is starting her next.
Your first single was Carrie's first single from that record ever.
Yeah.
When you get your very first check, because they start to, they drip in and they hit.
Right.
When you get that first writing check for a number one song, it's not that big, right? The first one.
The very first.
The very first one.
It takes a long time to get paid out.
Year?
Yeah, I don't know the exact, but it's...
Where's it apex? A year?
Yeah, there's probably like... Yeah, probably a year, and then there's a couple big quarters, and then it starts dwindling off, but...
I'm always intrigued by people when they say songs either fell out of them in like 30 minutes or took days and days.
Yeah.
For example, Shane Mack and I was talking about how they did Body Like a Backer, and it took weeks.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think a lot of that, that's Sam's process. He, you know, it's not wrong. It's just a different... I mean, obviously, that song is massive, but it might not sound like something that they spent days and days on, but every song is different.
So what song was, like, back-breaking for you that ended up being this hit? That you're like, I can't believe we finished it, because it was just like, what in the world?
Well, you know, a song... And I haven't had one that I've spent days and days writing, but it's taken a long time to get to. Like, and this is after this big build up, you'll be like, what? That's like the dumbest song ever. But Hillbilly Bone, literally, Craig Wiseman and I got together and we were grinding on this other idea all day. Like, just, and this is like a real testament to Craig Wiseman's work ethic, because I tried to leave that right like 3 or 4 times. And finally, at like 5 p.m. he goes, man, let's just try something else. Let's just do something else. And he's like, just do one of your crazy beatbox things. So I was like, and we started with that riff, and he's literally just being dumb, like, yo, belly, boom, ba, boom, ba, boom. We just, it got a reaction, and it's like, you got to pay attention to that in the room. And we just started laughing, like, what could this be? And so it turned out, like, I was rapping on the verses, and then he sang the chorus. And so they ended up pitching that to Blake. He heard it, and he loved it, but he's like, you guys got to put a melody on the verses. So we went back in, not like it's this amazing melodic song, but we put a melody to it. But that song, literally, it wasn't one of those we had this title, like, I want to write a song called Hillbilly Bone. Like, no. It was just being in a room all day and cornering yourself on a certain idea not happening, and then just not overthinking anything and writing something fun. And that's happened other times too, but that's like the main example I can think of.
I'm intrigued by your hip hop influence, and I say that for a couple of reasons. And just so you can kind of know a little bit of my backstory, at one point in my life, I signed a hip hop record deal.
Really?
So it didn't last long, but
you did.
But I did, and you know, as you start to talk, I'm just like, man, okay, how in the world did that happen? Like, because for me, I literally grew up in a black town. And wow. So all my friends listen to hip hop. That's what I had. And then I went grunge in the 90s while I listened to McGraw and Garth. That's where my hip hop influence comes from. Like, what about you?
For me, I mean, I grew up in a small, very small town in Pennsylvania, and it was a white town. But I mean, I think like a lot of other people my age, I listen to everything. You know, country, I really connected with country music, I think, because I could relate to the lyrics, but the music I loved and go to school dances and that, it was hip hop. And like all my friends, it was like listening to 90s country and 90s hip hop. And that is through all of my music. Like, I just love both of them. Lyrically, obviously, I relate to country music. So it's easy for me to write that in the sense that it's authentic. But musically, my first tape I ever had was, and this isn't hip hop, but it was Michael Jackson, Thriller. And from there, I just like popular music. And
it's refreshing to hear someone actually say that. I think everybody feels it.
Yeah.
But people are scared to say it.
It's true. And I have so much respect for I'm not saying know as much as some people, but I know the history of country music, and I love it, but this is who I am, and this is how I grew up, so it's pretty authentic, you know, the way I write. And I love very traditional country music, and I love a lot of current stuff, and I think that's why I actually have a job.
Best rapper alive right now?
Oh man, I mean, probably it's probably Eminem.
I was gonna say the same thing.
Yeah, I mean.
And you know what? We're two white guys saying a white guy, but here's what I did. I said that on the radio one morning on my country morning show. We were talking about hip-hop. And I said, I think Eminem's the greatest rapper alive. And I know I'm a white guy, and you're going to go, well, you're a white guy picking a white guy. So I called Charlamagne the God, who has the hip-hop show. He's my best friends in the world.
Yeah.
And so I called him, and they were on the air in New York doing the Breakfast Club. And I was like, hey, dude, I'm saying Eminem's the best rapper. And we put him on the air, like, straight up. I was like, you can tell me I'm an idiot, and I'm just a white guy saying a white guy. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, there's absolutely an argument that Eminem's the greatest rapper alive. You know, there are about 3 or 4 people that you could say is the greatest rapper alive, but when Eminem comes on a track, it's not your track anymore.
No.
It doesn't.
And you're literally captivated. How many other, like, a lot of guys have great flow and it sounds cool, but he literally says something with those lyrics, and you're just, like, drawn into the story. A lot of times I'm like, okay, I need to listen to it. Naughty by Nature after this or something, because it's just so heavy, but it's amazing.
It takes about 3 listens at times to really hear an Eminem song too.
Yeah.
Well, he did a song with Big Sean on Big Sean's latest record.
No favors. Yeah.
And it was the trouble that I got into was there's a political message behind it, and I wasn't talking about political message.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because it was like Ann Coulter and and Trump, but I was just like, guys, and Big Sean is as legit as they get right now.
Oh yeah.
And so, and what I need from him, no favors. M comes in this track. It's not Big Sean's track anymore.
And he's like, you know, he's telling the engineer, keep looping it. I'm not done after 16 bars or whatever it is.
The same happened with Lil Wayne when it was Wayne and M and somebody else was on a track. And
later, here we go. Fuck you looking at, hater. I saw them eyes like an ass raper.
And his style changes.
Try to copy my swag like a cheating classmate. I'll be the last face you see before you pass when you get your fucking ass graded like a mat paper. So ahead of my time, late means I'm early. My age is reversing, I'm basically 30. Amazingly sturdy, zany and wordy, brainy and nerdy, blatantly dirty, insanely perverted, rapey and scurvy, they blame me for murdering Jamie Lee Curtis. Said I put a face in the furnace, beat it with a space heater, a piece of furniture, egg beater, thermos. It may be disturbing, what I'm saying is cringeworthy, but I'm urinating on Fergie. Call Shady number 81, Shirley, I'm turning into the Aaron Hernandez. The rap state of emergency, the planet's having panic attacks. Brady's returning, matter of fact, I may be deserving of a pat on the back like a Patriots jersey. Inexplicable stomach growl from the pit of it, like a fucking terrier hitting it. Despicable, dumb it down, ridiculous, tongue is foul. Shoot off at the fucking mouth like a missile, a thundercloud. 100-pound pistol, pull the trigger, this gun'll sound, and you'll get a pound like Digital Underground.
He's not even into it yet. He's about to really get into it too. Like, he's stretching right now. He's just stretching.
A damn pole cutter, a sandal, a can of butter, a candle, rubber, piano, a flannel sucker, some hand soap, butter, a banjo, and manhole cover. Hand over the mouth and no smother trample. Ran over the tramp with the Land Rover, the band, the Lambo, Hummer and Roll. Runner go ham, don't nutter go Rambo. Gotta make an example of her. That's Sandra Blanho and Philando. Hannibal on the lamb, no wonder I am so stubborn. I'm anti, can't no government handle a commando. Your man don't want it, Trump's a bitch. I make his whole plan go under. And tell Dre I'm meeting him in L.A. White Bronco like Elway speeding. I'm about to run over a chick. Delray CDN.
There's just so much nuance in there, too, that you don't
I know. I'm like, White Bronco? Like, wait, that was a... Oh, yeah, he played for the Broncos.
Like beating the Chalet Helium. Leaving him pale-faced, medium-sized welt. Straight treating him like a cellmate CD. I'm climbing Hell's Gate. Bitch, I'm like your problems. Self-made. Meaning someone else's self ain't needed. Cause I'm a... Make it, boy.
It's just like, you hear that and you go, that's not even the same Eminem from three years ago, much less...
He's amazing.
He continues to get better.
I know. That's wild.
And as a rapper in a young man's game,
yeah,
he continues to still be better than...
Yeah, how are you still like the freshest thing, you know? That's not supposed to be how it works.
Yeah, I posted, and I was talking about this song, and God, I got crushed because there's a line about Trump, and I was like, I don't even care about that. Like,
no, you weren't.
Like,
yeah,
get off my nuts, man. That's what I remember. All I was doing was saying, there's nothing like this.
Yeah.
Like, he's in his 40s, and, I mean, he can sit down with Future and teach him a lesson still.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's amazing.
We're talking about country music here. This is what I get
country
into on
and
the
western.
Yeah, that's what I get into on the radio too. Like, I get in trouble for my station program directors because I'll just go off to talking about whatever, and they're like, "We don't like you talking about other kinds of music."
But is that because of the way everything still has to be? Because I would think it feels like listeners now aren't.
But that's why I do it, because we're humans, and my listeners are humans. And no humans have just a bunch of country music on their list, and that's it.
And what's the like typical country demographic now? Because, I mean, I'm going to be 40 next year, and I grew up listening to everything. So at some, you know,
and it's the demographic. Let's say 40 and under,
right?
Even older than that. We had Napster. We had everything that allowed all these influences of the people that are making music now to be influenced. Yeah. And so that's why you're hearing music going all these different directions, because for the first time, music was able to spread like that.
Yeah.
Instead of it being regional.
Right.
Or having to be shipped in a box.
Yeah.
Or your parents only giving it to you. You could just I would go to bed in the dorm. Like, I'd be in the dorm. And I would go, what letter do I like? L. Let me download every song that starts with L while I go to sleep on Napster for free. And, you know, that's how it was.
Yeah.
And that was the Wild Wild West. Now it's just a Wild West as we figure out how songwriters get paid, you know, with Spotify and Tidal and iTunes.
Yeah, it's changed so much. I used to get so excited for Tuesdays to go out and buy a new album.
That's what I used. That was crazy. Tuesday used to be the day instead of Friday.
But even now, you can't. It's like now it's like Friday morning. Pick the phone up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like what's new that I can just go? Do you have a problem too? Like, what is your thoughts on full out like 12 song albums now?
I mean, I think there's a place for it, but the reality is with just listening habits and I don't know. I mean, I think it's rapidly going away because people want new, and even I do. Like, I want to hear. I like hearing it together, but I also am ready for like what's the next thing, because part of that is just that whole instant gratification. But now, just because it's so easy to do that, because in the past there was a reason for the 12 album or the one album, whatever, a year cycle. But now it doesn't cost any extra to put a song up online, you know. And so I just think that I think it depends on the artist too, but as far as young new artists, there's not a whole lot of reason to just try to make one album a year or every two years.
Like, I feel like too, if you put out 12 songs, some of them just get missed because we are like,
oh yeah,
you know, I don't like that one, immediately write the second, so I'm gonna go to the next one. And like, no, we don't, I give like things
10,
a chance.
I like, I mean, if it's a full album, I like 10 songs. That's what
I like. Four, I like John Mayer doing 4 songs at a time and making me wait for another month so I can love those 4.
Yeah.
And it made me love 4 more.
It's true.
It's all changing. It's changing. From the last 5 years, it's dramatically changed.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see.
How about, man, you have so many songs here.
That's all good.
Some of them. Let's see. What would I like to hear about? This one here, because Shay McAnally was in talking about this one. Right? You read the Shay? So.
That's me doing background.
Yeah. Paul, let me hear that again. Is that really, that's you?
Yeah.
Let me hear that. Let me see if that's true. Hold on.
That's just me stacked up. Jesus, Sammy, blue jean baby, born
in the USA. Yeah, that sounds like
That's off the demo.
So, okay, tell me your story of this song. Because it's always interesting to hear.
My story. Okay, I remember it.
Yeah, it's always, because all the stories are true, but it comes from so many different directions.
Sure. So, from my recollection of this was Rodney Clausen and Shay McAnally and I got together over at my little office studio. And I think we were working on something else, but I picked up this bass guitar I have that's actually my friend Barry Dean, who's another great writer in town here. And I just started playing the boom, 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 boom. I didn't sing that in tune, but, you know, basically kind of the riff. And we kind of wrote that to the bass. So I'm playing that, and then Shane and Rodney start doing the mm, 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 mm. So that was kind of our groove. And we're like, this feels good. We wrote, from what I remember, the verse. We didn't have a title. Wrote the verse and got all the way up to the final line of the what rhymes with the give me a kiss, Rolling Stone, not American. Oh, what is this? Mm. And finally, I don't know if Shane or Rodney said it. I don't think it was me. Said American Kids. And we're like, it's like you're so into it. We're like, is that good? And then it's like, yeah. And then the post, I think, is what kind of takes it over the edge, you know. Growing up. And it's just this chant. And from the time we wrote that, I felt really strongly about that song. Like, this, I feel like this is one of the best songs I've written in a long time. And we just couldn't get anybody to get on it. I know it was on hold for, like, McGraw.
So, Little Big Town was the story that Shane was saying, and he was on an airplane.
Yes. Oh, yes. This is right. Yeah. So Shane was, you know, of course, the circles he runs in. He's on an airplane with Kenny Chesney. He's like, hey, I played this. I put the headphones on Kenny and played this, and he's like, I'm cutting that. And then it was on hold for Little Big Town. I mean, there's so many different people who are pitching these songs. You're just hoping somebody likes it. I'm like, hey, who wants it? Like, because I really believed in it. And I think at the time, from what my understanding was, that Little Big Town was into it, but somebody in the camp wasn't really, like, it wasn't like a full 100%, whether it was a couple guys in the band who weren't into it or producer or label, but it didn't sound like a for sure thing. They're like, we like it, you know, but Kenny's like, I want to cut that. So as a writer, you get in these situations and, you know, there's a lot of relationships that you have to take care of. That's, I try to stay out of, I'm not as good about pitching my songs to artists because I worry about getting in these situations, even though I should just like email the song. And I've tried to do it a little more, but that was a little bit awkward, but you know, it obviously worked out. And I think that Kenny really, like when he says he wants a song and believes in it, like I really do appreciate that he just goes and does it. And it's like, I'm going, if he says I'm going to cut this, he will.
To be fair, talking about Shane Circle, Shane and I did fly on Southwest together to Boston.
Yeah, that was so, the first time he flew coach in a long time.
That was the, well, that's the Bobby Circle.
I've never flown on a private jet. I gotta meet some people.
With 20 plus number ones?
Eric Church called me once. He's like, hey, man, you ever fly on a private jet? I was like, no. He goes, you want to? I was like, yeah. He goes, well, tonight we're going to something. But I literally couldn't. It was like something like my mom was coming in town. I can't remember what it was. I was like, oh. And so I called Eric when he got back. I was like, hey, how was that? He goes, oh, I'm a changed man.
With Eric, I mean, you wrote some monsters. Like Talladega? Yeah. Like that's a career song for someone. Talladega. So talk about this one.
Yeah, this is, you know, Eric's one of those artists too. I mean, he is a, if he wasn't be out there being a superstar, he would be like me and be on Music Row writing songs for other people, because he's first and foremost a songwriter. He thinks like a songwriter. He obsesses over songs, ideas. We were on a bus in Albany, New York, and I can't remember. I think it was Daytona. One of the races was on the TV in the front lounge, and it was on mute. And he was like, man, I kind of want to write. He's friends with Marty Smith, who does, he's on ESPN and does all the commentary for NASCAR, as well as a bunch of other stuff now. But he's like, I want to write something like about, and he's like, not a NASCAR song, but just that feeling, that camaraderie that those fans have. And I didn't grow up watching NASCAR, really. But I related to it in the sense that, like, country music concerts. So we used to go to this place in West Virginia called Jamboree in the Hills, and it still
happens.
They call it the Super Bowl of country music, and it is, man, it's some good people watching, but it's just country music fans, and we would do that. It was kind of like a tradition with my buddies. So I was kind of being inspired, drawing from that. But he's like, I want to write this song. And so I think we kind of were singing Daytona or like some different things. And then he's like, Talladega. And I was just like, man. And it had the emotion. It wasn't like this cheesy, I don't know, but we wrote that. I felt really good about that song. And we wrote it probably 2 years before that album came out. So that was, I didn't even know if it would ever see the light of day, because so much time had passed and he'd written so many songs, but I guess he always had that one in his back pocket, and knowing he wanted to put it out.
With Eric, you wrote, or for Eric, these are, I have a bunch of Eric Church songs. They're like, I mean, this is a jam. When you go into a jam song like this, you're like, all right, we're going up tempo, we're going to jam it.
That was feeding off the energy. We were in North Dakota. He was playing some armory or something, and it was literally -9 degrees. So I'm out in the crowd, and it's not even like bleachers. It's like a one level room. I go out to the front of the house, and I just notice, and I don't know what the whole, you know, keg setup was at this place, but people had red Solo cups just walking around and holding them up. And like, just in my head, I just hear this like real similar, all I want to do is put a drink in my hand. It just kind of kept running through my head. So I went back to the bus, and when he got off the bus, I was out there with him and another writer in town, Michael Heaney, who's written a lot with Eric. I get off the bus, or he comes off stage. He's like literally pulls his ears out, and he's like sweating, like pumped up from the show. And I was like, I just got a line, and I didn't even know. And I was like, I just play the three chords. All I wanna do is put a drink in my hand. He's like, I love it. Let's write that. We wrote that whole song right there in the front lounge. We were writing the verses so fast that his wife, Catherine, was, none of us were keeping track of the lyrics. So she's like typing down, we just hit record on GarageBand or whatever. And she's typing down all the lyrics we have. And it was just kind of this repetitive. There's a lot of words in that song for being such a simple, like, because the choruses all change and we had so many different versions of choruses. I still, like, if I play it at a writer's night, I have to look at the lyrics. But it was that one I felt really strongly about just because it was just so up and party. And I was like, his fans will freak out if they hear this song. And that ended up being his first number one. So that was really exciting.
You mentioned it took 2 years for Talladega. Like, what's the longest? Because I mean, sometimes you write a song and I guess it just sits. What song ever surprised you because it came back to life out of nowhere? You're like, whoa, what in the world?
One that surprised me, because again, it's not a, I wouldn't necessarily consider this a work of art, but Gunna by Blake Shelton. First of all, that's about the most forgettable title I've ever heard in my life. But I get an email and they're like, hey, Blake Shelton put Gunna on hold. And this, so much time had passed and just how unmemorable that title was to me. I'm like, I don't think that's my song. Like, cause I didn't recognize the title. And I was like, so I went back into Dropbox. I was like, oh gosh, I did write this song with Craig. And I was like, when I heard the chorus, I was like, man, you know, it's funny how songs work. Cause like, you might think, oh, this song's whatever. But the second, like, an artist is interested in it, or it gets to be a single, starts climbing the chart, you're like, This is pretty good. I'll start liking it a little more.
What was the time? Like, from when you wrote it till they put it on hold?
I mean, it wasn't crazy long, but I bet it was 4 years.
Wow.
Which nowadays, that is a long time. I mean, you hear these stories of like a song after 10 years or something, but those are so rare because people are so of the moment. And even like the demos that we do, they get dated pretty fast. So like, I listen to old songs of mine. I'm like, oh gosh, and some of them may be okay, but they just sound bad.
Let me throw and talk about Blue Apron for a second. I always appreciate Blue Apron because they have been here since the beginning of the Bobbycast, and I've actually been using them since before the Bobbycast. I've been using them since before they came on the actual radio show too. I love Blue Apron because it's about convenience and awesome food. And for example, I tell you this right here. Less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with pre-portioned ingredients. Comes right to your door in a box, and you choose your variety of recipes. They have a culinary team there. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Or if you want the same thing, get the same thing too. Like me, I'm a creature of habit like crazy. Each meal comes with a step-by-step process, and it's a card, and it teaches you how to do it, or I would not be able to do it. And you compare these at your house whenever you want. It's not like one of these microwave meals that you cook and it goes bad. Like, you make these whenever you want. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises every ingredient's fresh. Right now, 3 meals for free with free shipping, right? Go to blueapron.com/Bobby. You'll love how good it feels and tastes. blueapron.com/Bobby. Try that, blueapron.com/Bobby. Yeah, but Blue Apron's a better way to cook. All right, so, man, let's do... Like this song here for John Party. I mean, it, and I like John a lot. Like, John's not, I like John a lot. So I say, like, this was it. This is the song for him. This is what, this is what has made John and is going to make John a star. He got another one. It just hit too.
Yeah.
But this was it.
Man, you know, thing about this, or John, here's the thing. I've been a fan of his music for a long time, and I was a big fan of the first record, and I'd never had the opportunity to work with him, and I literally seeked him out because I loved his first album so much. It was like so country, but there's just a thing. It's not just like a throwback thing. He's a unique artist, and so I seeked him out and tried to get a day to write with him, and it was awesome because John's one of those guys. He comes in with his guitar and he sits down and starts playing. He's got this swagger and just starts mumbling. You're like, this is the jam. Like, he could say anything. And so in a situation with John, a lot of times I let him drive, like, musically, and I just try to make sense of some lyric. But he had that title, Head Over Boots. I was like, that dude, that's awesome. And that's you. And at the time, he's like, man, I don't know if I can do some of this other music that these guys are, you know, current, whatever they call it, bro country or whatever. But I was like, well, you don't have to. Like, just do yourself, you know, and hopefully it'll connect. Because I was like, if it connects, you've got that lane. And, like, then people are chasing you.
Then you've created the new lane. And that's, But that California record, that's what he did.
He really did.
Is that he took a traditional vocal and put it with slightly progressive sonic sound. Yeah. And it was like, everybody traditional was happy. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, hey, I love the new sound. And I was like, he's the unifier right now.
It's amazing. I mean, another thing with John, I remember I was out on the road with Thomas Rhett, and John was opening a couple of these club dates for him. And I just remember being in the backstage and just hear, like, John was out there playing and these grooves coming through the wall. So all you're hearing is like the low end. And I'm like, dang, that's like, all his songs feel so good. I'm like, I want to be part of that.
It sounds like my neighbors when I'm trying to go to bed. I'm just like, God, what are you? I can't even hear the good parts of the song. Yeah. I hear it. I try to go to bed at night, and all I hear is these neighbors next door. It's like outside. I live in a house. I didn't live in an apartment. That's so annoying. And gosh, like,
you have to move again.
Again, my other place flooded downtown. It's so obnoxious. I can't find anywhere to live, dude.
You lived out of town, right?
Well, first I moved to Brentwood.
Yeah.
And I lived down there because of security reasons. Like, sure. I had some issues, some guns and people threatening me, whatever.
Good
so
times.
My job was like, this is where you need to live.
Yeah.
So they moved me to this neighborhood. And for me, I felt safe because Lavox lived like four houses down. Carrie lived like eight houses down. I was like, nobody cares about me, but nobody's going to bother me because these people, they're worried about these people.
Yeah.
I moved from there because I just couldn't drive anymore. It was 40
haul.
Minutes and I was traveling. So I moved downtown and I got this condo. It's very super safe, all these codes. Mm-hmm. And there were two units on the top. And the neighbor was working on a water main. He just bought the place. And the place was built in like the 1800s, right? So it's not somewhere you go in and start knocking down walls.
Right.
Hit a water main, busted it, flooded the entire building. Millions and millions. I still own it. I can't get into it. I can't rent it. I can do nothing right now. At least for another 2 months, and it's been almost a year. So I had to move again. I don't know, dude. I need to write some of the hit songs so I can just have like all these places.
Oh, you got a good view up here.
Up here. Well, of cranes. I see a lot of cranes outside. All right, here's TR.
Yeah.
Is it ever weird? Do you ever think we shouldn't reference things that aren't country and songs? Is that ever a question where you're like, should we or shouldn't we talk about Guns N' Roses?
I mean, I never for once questioned that because everybody that listens to country now listen to Guns N' Roses. I mean, I think. I've been to the concerts.
And I agree with and I'm on your side of this too, which is at times been the downfall of my career.
Yeah.
But I wonder, as you're writing a song, do you ever pull out and you're like, hey, what if we throw a Lil Wayne reference in here? But you're like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we'll scale it back. You don't have to worry, about that?
I mean, I haven't really thought a lot about it, honestly. Yeah, maybe Bette Midler might not be what we're going for, but you never know.
Which of these songs, because we talked about Hillbilly Bone and it kind of happened, which of these songs just fell out of you?
Mm.
And you're like, man, that shouldn't have been that easy.
Take a Back Road.
And that's a jam, dude.
And it's one of my favorite songs I've written. Makes me want to take a back road. Makes me want to take the long way home. So, yeah, Red Akins, who, I mean, when I was in high school, I mean, I literally sang songs of his in a talent show.
TR's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I was like, oh, I'm writing with Red Akins. It was the first time we ever wrote. And he said he had that title. I think it was first like Ride a Dirt Road. And we're like, I don't know. And so changed it to Take a Back Road. It just felt good. And we both could write those lyrics all day because it's like where we both grew up. And even though he's from Georgia and I'm from Pennsylvania.
Do you ever feel the opposite now where someone's coming into a room with you and you can just tell they're petrified?
A little bit, but I always try to make people feel comfortable. Like, I'm never like, hey, I know it all. And like, because I don't. I'm just like, I hope. I get just as nervous a lot of times writing with a new person because I know they probably think, oh, he's written all these hits. He has the secret how to do it. And I literally don't. I'm just like, it's the same. I approach writing songs now the same way that I did before I ever had hits. So it's, you feel that a little bit, but I'm always trying to make people feel comfortable.
tell me about an instance where this new artist comes in. You don't know him. Someone's like, hey, you got to check him out. Because like you said, you try to find, you know, the fresh.
Sure.
With the current.
Mm-hmm.
And because fresh keeps you fresh.
Absolutely.
Some new artist comes in and you're like, okay, I mean, and it turns out they're a household name now. Like, who is someone that came in and you were like, oh, I wonder. And it turns out like, bam.
I mean, the first thing that name that comes to mind is Maren Morris. As far as a new, I'm trying to think who else.
Maren walks in and first thing met her, you're like, okay, there's something here.
Yeah, I was just like, she's super talented. And you know, even before that, kind of who's become Big Pop, and I haven't had any hits with her, was I wrote with Meghan Trainor, and she's in Nashville, and I just think, oh, this is a
She's
new
got the number
writer.
One song this week, by the way, on country radio.
Oh, yeah.
Lauren Alanis song. It.
That's right.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's crazy. But she's so talented. And I didn't even, when I met her, I didn't even know, like, oh, she's going for the artist thing. I just thought, this is a really good writer. We wrote something cool. She's really talented. Next thing I know, they're like, yeah, Meghan Trainor's in L.A., and she got L.A. Reid signed her. I'm like, what? You just don't see it coming, and then it's cool. It was
her second number one country song, too, because I think she wrote the Rascal Flatts song, maybe I Like the Sound of It. One of their newer ones.
Yes.
Her and Shay wrote together.
Yeah, and maybe Jesse Frazier or something. Yeah, that's right.
And
which
so is crazy. She's got a couple of pop songs.
And I bet these are songs she wrote back when she was like kind of in the Nashville scene, like writing songs.
So you wrote with her and you were like, there's something here. Like you could tell.
Well, I could tell she was talented, but I didn't know she was going to be a superstar. You just don't know. But like, who else? I mean, I feel like I've written with a lot of people before they blew up. Brett Eldridge. It's weird now, like, I'm at the age where there are starting to... I didn't write with Luke Bryan before he got big, but we both kind of came to town around the same time. Like, real quick, funny story about that is, so Luke, you know, had hits as a couple hits as a songwriter before he, you know, made it as an artist.
Like, Good Directions, Billy Currington was the number one for him.
Yeah. So Luke and I just remember going to this guy's house who was a fairly established songwriter, and I had zero cuts. No hits, no cuts. But this guy was like, I was like, oh, that's cool. He likes me. He's going to take a chance on me and write with me. So I get into this co-write, and we get about halfway through the song. And he goes, so when is Capitol talking about putting your record out? And I was like, oh, no, he thinks I'm Luke Bryan. And he did. He thought I was... It's like, do I look like an artist? I don't know. But I was like, and then I felt weird for him. I was like, how do I say? I was like, not only am I not Luke Bryan, I am nobody. I have no hits. I don't. The guy ended up being really nice about it, but I was just like, because we were like kind of the two Lukes in town.
Well, you're not Luke Bryan. Wait, this is not Luke Bryan. Wait,
this is not the guy. And I was like, yeah, I know. I don't. But I told Luke that story. He got a kick out of it, but.
With Luke, I got a few here for you. I See You.
Mm-hmm.
Fast.
60 seconds now feels more like.
By the way, congrats again. Is it still
Thank
cool?
You.
I mean, listen, frankly talking, after the 10th or 12th or 18th, it's still awesome.
Oh, it's so awesome.
Is it still so awesome, though?
Yeah, I mean,
or is it pressure filled, where it's more of a relief that you did it again because you're expected to?
Yeah, it's weird because I still feel a pressure, but not like once you have one number one song, you're a number one songwriter, and literally nobody knows or cares how many number ones you have, except like maybe you, like you know, but people don't know, and then people are like, so and so has so many number ones, but it's like on what chart, you know? It's like I'm kind of like. You know, in a few years from now, what charts or what, you know what I mean? It's just so different, but it's weird because there is a pressure, but you're just happy to be in the game. Like still getting a cut on a new artist or a big artist is still super exciting for me. Like that is part of what keeps me doing it. Cause it is like a challenge and it's like a game. You're like, oh, I've done this. I want to do it again.
What's the deal with you mentally? Like, you go to bed at night, do you write down, okay, I may want to do this tomorrow, or do you do most of the work in the room? Like, where does that...
Well, I know who I'm going to be working with that week, so I like to get to my write, like, 2 hours before I work with anyone. So I can either work on ideas, or if it's an artist, kind of think in my mind, where would I see him going next? Because what do I have to offer here? I don't, honestly, at night, once I leave there, I'm not, it pretty much leaves me. I pretty much separate it, and then I'm a morning person, so I get inspired in the morning.
Who are your, everybody's in a, everybody's got in a little pack, a little group. Like, you know, Natalie Hamby comes in. She's in the Miranda camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ross came in, and, mm-hmm. you know, Ross and Urban are now working on a lot of stuff together, but yeah. Ross wrote with Dirt, you know, everybody's got their, who are your people?
You know, I feel like I've run in a couple different circles, but my people are, like, writer-wise, are, like, our people at Creative Nation, like, especially, like, Barry, Dean, and Natalie Hemby. They're, like, two of my best friends. And so, as far as artists, I mean, I had a pretty good run with Carrie. You know, maybe I'll get to work with her again. We haven't worked in a while. But I don't know. I run, like, I'll do, like, John Party. He and I are kind of, I think, on a, I mean, we've only had the one hit, but, like, we're starting to write some new stuff that I'm excited about. I've kind of been in the Eric thing a little bit. I just kind of move around. Like, whoever wants to, I'd be on everybody's camp if they want to work with me. I mean, and the thing is, I truly am a fan of lots of different kinds of music. I'm not like, oh, I can't stand that. Now, if there's something that I'm just not really into, I'll be honest and just try to, you know, not do it. If I just don't genuinely like someone's music or something, I'm not going to, even if they're a huge star, I'm not going to try to just get in there, because there's so many things I do like.
You mentioned Natalie, and Natalie's awesome. Like,
yeah, she is.
She is so much fun. And, you know, she came and we talked. And she, again, you guys share some, you share some songs with a lot mm-hmm. of the other folks that come in. And she told the story about this song that you guys wrote. I'd be curious to hear your version of this song.
Well, okay, so she and Barry and I wrote this, and we're always curious what version. Because now it's been a few years. But the way I remember writing this song was Natalie came over, and she and Barry and I were just BSing. And she was telling the story about, she and I had written an album cut for Miranda, a song called Fine Tune. And her publisher or somebody had heard the song through the wall and was like, hey, what's that song that I heard, like, that you wrote, Pontoon? She's like, no, it's called Fine Tune. She's telling Barry and I that story. So, of course, we're all like, we got to write a song called Pontoon. Because it just was too good. I'm like, gosh, that sounds like a good country song.
And did you expect it to be, like, when you finished it, were you like, is this too goofy?
Just the word pontoon is kind of goofy. So that's why I kind of just started with, like, a really simple, almost just a quirky little beat. Like, just silly, almost a... And so Barry and I literally, like, Natalie, what would you say? Like, if you were trying to write a song called Pontoon, like, what's the first thing? She's like, back this bitch up into the water. And we're just died. We're like, this is amazing. Like, if that's all the song said, literally on the demo, I, like, put that into a sampler. And, like, for the whole intro, it's like, back, back this bitch. Just because I thought it was so funny. We wrote that, and again, kind of like Hillbilly Bone, like we all reacted to it, and it made you feel something. It's like, as writers, that's what you're trying to do, whether it's a sad song or just something fun. Like, you just want it to kind of just catch your ear, and like, what? And I knew that, like, some people would hate that song, but I felt deep down that if it got at least a chance to get heard, that it could react. You know, I knew, and some people would hate it. So we got a few people, like, I think Dirk's had it on hold. It's when Kix Brooks made his solo thing. I remember getting the email, it's on hold. I was like, awesome, you know? But really, like, that song was the perfect storm, because Little Big Town believed in it. Their manager, Jason Owen, was just like, I'll bet my career on this song. And I'm thinking, gosh, I don't know if I'd do that. And I wrote the song. Are you sure? But with Jay Joyce producing, it was just at that time, too. And it still sounds, like, so cool on the radio. It's just so unique with their – yeah, but I mean, it's silly how big that song was.
Whenever you wrote Motorboating.
Yeah.
Were you like, huh?
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, were you like, a couple meanings to this, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, we were thinking about. You motorboating son of a bitch. But I mean, it was just another one of those parts in the song that we're just like, we have to. Because I remember thinking, trying to rhyme that, like in the ocean, or like, no, you don't take a pontoon in the ocean. And then, I don't even remember who said the motorboating, but we're like, I was just like, oh. And I don't, you know, in the time you're like, do they say, can you say that on the radio? But it's like,
it's actually a boat. You're actually writing something about a boat. Of course you can say motorboat.
Unless
about
you
a boat.
Saw that movie, no one's thinking of, you know. There's a funny story. You gotta, if you ever, have you done this with Lori McKenna?
I have not. I know Lori well, but she,
if you do, ask her about when she first heard that song.
Mike, make a note. Natalie told us too how when they went out and they were gonna buy, they went to buy a boat.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And the guy was like, I hate that song. Sucks. And she's like, oh.
Can you imagine? I mean, only in Nashville. What are the odds?
That's funny. So, I mean, you still ride every 5 days a week, 4 days a week?
Three to four. I mean, I work every day because a lot of times I'm working, like, I'll work on demos from songs I've already written or try to start new ideas for who I'm going to work with the next week. My ideal would be to write, like, 3 days a week and then the other 2 days work on tracks and ideas or finishing up demos and produce a little bit.
Do you walk down the street and there'll be someone who's like, hey, Luke Laird, I'm a new songwriter, can I get this, can I work with, has that happened to you much?
Not a lot, but in Nashville it happens. A TSA agent
really
hit me up
and said,
like,
what?
The same dude two times, like, he didn't even remember me. He came through and he goes, I know who you are. And I was like, he goes, man, I really like your songs. And I was like, oh, thanks, man. And then, like, literally 2 weeks later, it's like he forgot he said that to me. He goes, I know who you are. I was like, what?
Has anyone ever stopped you and said, hey, can I write with you? Like, just randomly from the street?
No, that's usually comes through Twitter and Facebook, which I can't imagine the stuff you get.
You can't, because it's
DM.
All...
Hit me up in the DM.
For me, it's never... And, you know, I write stupid songs and comedy songs and stuff, but it's always play my song. God.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
And the weird thing for me is...
I've probably done that to you.
The weird thing for me is I can't... I'm in a weird thing because I have a record deal because, you know, we have a band. And sure. I mean, look, you talk about all these charts. We have a number one comedy album. Like, there's so many charts.
Yeah, but that's amazing.
But I'm now a number one artist.
It's a legit, though. That's a legit... That's not like the... I won't mention whatever, but...
It's okay. It's somewhat legit. Yeah. Like, that's a real chart.
It's the last... Yeah.
And so... But it's since I'm writing music and I write stand-up, I can't listen to things because I can't even subconsciously try to pick up things because I don't want to accidentally write it and then get sued. But then again, I'm supposed to be listening for things because I'm trying to break new music all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just this weird place. And like, I go everywhere, people handing me CDs. I can't touch them. Do you have to do that where people
I'm like, no. And it is true. I mean, yes, you're kind of like, I don't know that I need to be listening to this, but yeah, it's just when you're in a position that where you are having chart success, like, it's nerve wracking. Like, when I'm writing a song and I start really liking it, I'm like, crap, am I on another song? Because it has happened. Like, I've been writing, like, this is awesome. Like, oh, crap, that's whatever hit by Ed Sheeran or something like that. You know, you're always trying to come up with something unique, but it's, you do think about that stuff.
Is it impossible, figuratively, to write a new love song?
No. Yes. It feels that way, and then you hear one, and you're like, man, they did it.
Like, why didn't I think it? Totally. What's a song you've heard in the past few years where you're like, God, I wish I'd written that song, because it's so freaking good?
Oh, my gosh. There's quite a few. That's the thing, when people are like, yeah, music now sucks. I'm like, no way. I listen to 90s country, and there are some really bad songs then too that I actually loved, but like, when I heard Blue Ain't Your Color, I was
me
just
too
like, dang. Yeah, me I too. Texted Hillary Lindsay. I was like, this song, like, it just, I listened to Keith's record and I was like, man, that thing just jumped out.
That's the song, to me, because we did think Keith and I did a thing. I was like, dude, it wasn't a single, wasn't his first single, and I was like, Blue Ain't Your Color is my favorite song on the record.
The melody, I mean, it's so good. And I really felt that way with Humble and Kind. I just thought It's just such a unique way to say, I mean, it's just so simple, but just to say humble and kind, you don't think of that as being like a easy, like conversational song, but
the thing about with that song too, because I was, so Tim and I were sitting in my office like an hour before we're supposed to go do something. And he's like, it wasn't this first single, Humble and Kind.
Right.
They weren't going to lead with that off of, I think it was Damn Country Music.
Yeah.
And he was like, there is this song on this record called Humble and Kind that's just going to change the whole game for me. And at the time, I'm like, he's talking about an album cut.
Yeah.
I don't really care. You know, it's out. Who knows? People talk about album cuts all the time. Yeah. And but man, was he right about that song.
He was so right.
And she wrote it by herself.
It's amazing. I mean, she really is one of the best. And Tim, you know, he is one of those artists who is such a good song person. If you look at throughout his career, I mean, yes, he may have had a few misses, but just at the right time, he will find a song that everybody's like, dang it, why didn't I get that? And it may have been pitched to a lot of other people, but he knows. He just knows songs. And, you know, you go see his concert and it's like hit after hit that are not just ditties. He has those, but he has just Song of the Year in there too. It's pretty amazing.
The cool thing about McGraw to me is that when I was a kid, he was awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm an adult. He's still the same awesome. It's not like he's a novelty act. His longevity of being relevant is really amazing.
It really is.
Like him and Chesney both.
Oh, it's both of those guys. I mean, right now, me being a Music Row Nashville songwriter, those two guys are like the first two people you try to get songs to. It's not like, well, they aren't really, you know, it'd be cool to have the cut, but no, those are, you want, like, you're, take your best stuff to them and hope they want it.
I just remember turning on my radio in Mountain Pine, Arkansas, and listening to Tim McGraw. You know, when I first heard Don't Take the Girl, I was like, what? Like, this is, they can do this in songs?
Yeah.
Like, I went through the whole roller coaster of emotion in this song. I was like, wow. You know, Indian Outlaws before that, then Don't Take the Girl. And I was like, this Tim McGraw guy's awesome.
Yeah.
But still, a song will come on now, and I'll be like, this Tim McGraw guy's awesome. It's like the same, like, who can last that long?
It's so hard. This business is so hard. So when somebody actually does it, it's, gosh, you got to respect it because, I don't know. And he's in better shape than every new artist too.
Yeah, like Tim's got that. Whatever I'm gonna do, I'm gonna do 100%.
Oh, dude, he's intense.
Yeah. And so 100% is he's gonna work out.
Yeah,
yeah. So, well, Luke, I appreciate you coming in, man.
Thanks for
like
having me.
It's like the Queen of England.
I didn't remember writing this one.
Yeah, yeah. This little something you wrote back in the game show era of the 70s. Wink Martindale, you and Wink Martindale put this together. It's the jam, huh?
Probably made a lot more money than most of
them. I appreciate you coming in, and you just Lou Laird on Twitter? You don't tweet that much, though.
No, I'm more on the Instagram now, but...
Because I look for you tweeting, you don't tweet that much.
No.
I haven't tweeted you. I was like, hey, dude. And then I didn't hear
anything. I responded to that.
Like 18 days later, and I was like, oh, he's always on that Luke Laird delay plan. He does a delay tweet.
Oh, yeah, too cool.
Tweet.
No, yeah, I didn't even know.
I appreciate you coming. You know, thanks. What's funny is, one, because I started this, and it's all about, for me, I love songwriters.
Yeah.
And I love talking about how the concept and the craft and what didn't work out. And what, mm-hmm. So, you know, we started this thing, you know, months and months and months ago. I think it was, you know, Caitlin Smith, and mm-hmm. she's a friend of mine, and it went for whatever. And I'd just be like, hey, so-and-so came in. And they're like, oh, well, they came in. Well, I want to come in. But because you decided to come in, because one always makes another, and I don't know who it was that,
well,
that got you to come in. But who was it that was like, hey, that's not so terrible? Was there anybody for you that said that?
No, I think Mike just hit me.
Well, that's very kind of you. But so Karen Fairchild, who I'm friends with,
yeah.
But I wasn't gonna really ask her to, because it's like there's this fine line of friendship and work.
I know, it's always trying to...
It's like, I don't even ask him to come on the show.
Yeah.
And I could text him. I could text Luke and Dirk all the time and be like, hey, but I don't, because there's... Yeah. You want to have that free space of just being humans.
Sure.
But at the ACM, Karen was like, Luke's doing your show? I'm coming to your house to do the bot. And I was like, that's what it took? Like, Luke Laird's going to come? She's like, yeah, it must be legit if Luke's coming.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, all right, whatever it takes, Karen. So, really good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Episode what? It's 51? 52. Wow, Luke Laird. And thanks again to Blue Apron and 100 Flowers for sponsoring this. And, you know, buy the music. Just buy the music. That's how these guys eat, right? And eventually you'll figure this thing out.
That's it.
One of my best buds is, like, always up at Capitol Hill, Lee Miller.
Yeah.
Like, fighting for songwriters. And we sit and we... Obviously, we're coming from different places, but he's like one of my true friends.
Yeah.
And he's like, let me tell you why I hate you. And I'm like, okay, go ahead. And I'm like, dude, I don't run radio. I just get a check.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. Let's feed these guys. So, buy the music. All right. We're going to go. We'll see you next time here. Episode 52 of the Bobbycast is over.